This episode of Wooshers Breakaway is brought to you by NetSuite. Successful companies know faster growth requires right tools. If you're doing 1, 10, or hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue, NetSuite by Oracle gives you a full picture of your business, finance, inventory, HR, customers, and more all in one place. Over 19,000 companies trust NetSuite, the world's number one cloud business system. Schedule your free product tour right now and receive your free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profits at netsuite.com/listen. That's netsuite.com/listen. Good show from me and Greg today. We talked about Zucker, the wild hockey player who just got traded to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Talked about the Rangers trading for him. That is obviously not going to happen anymore. He's not available for the Rangers because he's now a Pittsburgh Penguin for the next 3 years. So that's a little bit of an editor's note. Otherwise, here's Mark Messier, and let's get to the show.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Hey, Bush Breakaway fans, welcome to another episode of Bush Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan Mead. I'm the Athletic. I'm here with my co-host, Greg Kaplan, also the Athletic. Greg, say hello.
Okay, so here's what I was saying about the norovirus.
Okay, so let's talk about plagues.
Yeah, so no, it is funny to me. Then don't get me wrong. It's very serious. International response needs to be done because this thing can get out of hand real quick. But here's the thing about the norovirus. We're talking about something.
Wait,
is the
norovirus now, is that what they're calling the coronavirus? I'm not up on news.
Sorry, that's what I mean. It's the same shit.
Okay.
They're all in the, no, but they are all in the SARS family. Like, okay. They're different variations of the same fucking strain of illness. Yeah. Either way, coronavirus, that shit. We're all freaking out about it. Ryan, you know how many people have died from the flu this year in the United States?
Way more than the coronavirus. But I will tell you that someone at my wife's hospital has the coronavirus, and I got a very alerted text today. Like, we have this person on lockdown. I might bring corona home.
Do they have it? Or are they being evaluated for it?
They're being evaluated, but it's not the strand that is the bad one, supposedly. I'm a doctor, as you can tell.
The novel coronavirus?
I don't know. It's one
of the... Either way, 25,000 Americans have died this year from the flu.
Yes.
That's a staggering number.
It's a lot.
That is the amount of people who go to Met games on Thursday nights when they're good.
Get your flu shots, everybody. It's important.
Yeah,
Jesus. Wash your hands.
It's like, I get it. The coronavirus, very serious. This is a very big thing. But seriously, 25,000 is such a large number. Why aren't we talking about that more?
I think there's a lot
of
stuff we don't talk
about.
That's
such a big number.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Anyway,
let's talk about the Rangers.
New York number one New York Rangers podcast. That's it. That's
speaking
us
of,
right
speaking
now.
Speaking of the flu. This fucking hockey team.
What's wrong with it? I don't have the flu. Someone just honking incessantly outside my apartment.
Philadelphia, gotta love it. Catch a fever.
Gotta love it. So beat the Leafs. Get.
Were you gonna say beat the flu?
Beat the flu. Beat the coronavirus and beat the Leafs. And then Sabres somehow lose to a really struggling Sabres team. And then come back to stay at Madison Square Garden and absolutely dismantle the Kings, which are the Kings. How much better are the Kings than the Red Wings? Like 25%, 50%. The Red Wings are really bad.
If the Red Wings are the coronavirus, the Kings are the flu.
That's pretty much
how we get back to what we were talking about.
Pretty much where I'm
at. They're both bad. They're really bad.
And it is a little bit embarrassing to lose to the Sabres team, especially when the Sabres, I believe, had lost like four in a row and then were shut out.
Yeah, is it embarrassing though?
I don't know. It's just like
the fight. We got to be careful when we call a loss embarrassing. It's like, oh, the Rangers, no. A not great hockey team, lost to another not great hockey team.
There, it was a trap game, really. It's like the Rangers.
Even a trap game.
It's a trap game to me.
Aren't that good?
They're an average team. Buffalo. Well, I guess Buffalo's record shows that they're not that bad. But the game.
No, the Sabres are just. Here's what you're miscalculating, misdiagnosing here. Okay. They're just both bad.
Doctors.
Both teams are bad.
Both teams are above 500. But
that again, doesn't mean they're good.
That's true. They're not playoff teams. But
yeah,
I don't know. It just, I guess it didn't. It just felt like a game the Rangers should win. Is it a big deal? No, it's not. It's really not a big deal. The Rangers
really
have a 2% chance
really
to make
not.
The playoffs. But I love
I
celebrating.
Hold on. I think they got up to 5.3.
Oh, hey. Bet those odds now. The Rangers beat the Kings, and I love beating the Kings. Like, I love watching Jonathan Quick get scored on. It's one of my favorite things. I don't care how petty it is. I love it. Did the game matter whatsoever? No. Did Kako score on, like, what was maybe one of the easiest goals of his life? Absolutely, he did. Filippito played his mind out that game. And should we just talk about DiGiuseppe? What's up with him? Where'd he come from? Has he always been this good? Is he going to be this good for a long time? Because he's been playing quite well on the NHL level, and I didn't know he was this caliber of player. Or am I just overrating him because I've only seen him for 4 games in small sample size? Hashtag.
I think it's a little bit of that. But before we go further into DiGiuseppe and the ridiculousness that has come from weird Twitter conversations regarding him, you know what's weird?
Tell me.
And I know this is going to hurt your feelings. Well, it's not going to hurt your feelings. You're just going to vehemently disagree with me.
Okay.
I don't really harbor hate for the Los Angeles Kings.
That's fucking crazy.
I don't. But, you know, but hold on. Because I also don't harbor hate towards the Kansas City Royals. Like, I don't know if it's just
that's different.
Who I am as a sports fan. How is it different?
I guess they both lost in 5 games. So
yeah, and the Mets had leads in every game, Ryan. If anything, I should be really fucking mad at the Kansas City Royals.
I think it was...
I don't know. I just... At this kind of sports fan that I am, it's like I find things my team could have simply done better, and that's as far as I go.
No, I don't
hold any grudges against any specific king. Like, there isn't a single king where I'm like
Martinez
slighted by. Yeah, Martinez. I'm not. I don't feel anything for Alec Martinez. I really don't. Like, I feel nothing for that man.
I
on a human level, he is another human being. I acknowledge his existence, and that's as far as I go.
Dislike a lot of them. Gabrick?
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't hold a single negative opinion of the Los Angeles Kings, and it's weird. And it's just something I think about. It's like
to me it's a little different. Like the Royals weren't like stunting on you. They weren't, you know, they weren't like bat flipping and being assholes about winning. They were just like, it was a competitive.
I think you forgot how, you know, the Mets and Royals like literally almost fought in Game 3. Right?
I did forget about that. So yeah. Maybe I did. I guess we just view this differently then. Cause I do not like the Kings at all. I talk about that series like once a week.
And it's not like I don't hate other NHL teams. I do. Like,
right.
You, I've gone on Flyer rants.
We've
I don't need
about
to
it.
Do it again
nope,
today.
You do not.
But it's, I don't know. I don't. I think partially it's because it's a one-off. Like, you, if you're the Rangers and you're in the playoffs, the only chance you get to play the Kings is in the Stanley Cup, right? Whereas whatever I feel towards the Capitals, the Flyers,
I don't hate
those
the
are
Capitals,
teams I know
though.
That
I know that's crazy.
But I don't think I hate them either, mostly because, again, I think we've talked about this before too, where I've never like gone into a series against the Capitals thinking they're unbeatable.
Yeah.
So like there's no fear. Therefore I don't hate them. I don't know. It's weird. The Kings to me are just another team on the calendar. Like, that's all they are to me.
For me, no way. I love watching them suffer. I love it. I hope that team is mediocre and on the borderline for many, many years. I hope they never win a Stanley Cup again while I'm alive. That's where I'm at. I'm really on this. Wow. I'm totally different than you. That Stanley Cup final, like, it hurt me deep for a very long time. I think about it all too often. I think about the Chris Kreider crossbar, and I know that's not the Kings' fault, but I think about it way too much. It's the longest 5-game series of my life. I don't understand. It's terrible. I hate it. Anyway, where were we? Oh yeah, three-headed goalies.
Well, no. We were talking about DiGiuseppe. Here's the thing, guys. Okay. I gotta throw this out there. I do think what we're seeing from DiGiuseppe, I think, is partially real. I think this is the kind of guy he is and has always been, which is why it was so beneficial having him in Hartford, because you had, I mean, he's better than Vinny Leteri, but he's still like just a higher percentile type quad A player where he'll have moments in the NHL where you're like, oh, wow, that's interesting. And then he'll have plenty more moments where it's just like, oh, okay, yeah, that's fine. We can try passing this guy through waivers and he'll probably get through without anyone claiming him. The people who are like, oh, Brandon Smith, what was he doing on this roster instead of DiGiuseppe? It's like, guys...
Oh no! That's not a fight I'm taking.
I like Brandon Smith.
I still do.
If it's a fight you're taking, it's like you're kind of missing the forest through the trees here. Like, again, first of all, Brendan Smith's start to the season, he was never the problem. We've agreed on this many times before. But it's like, you don't worry about creating a roster spot for a guy like Phil DiGiuseppe. You hope a guy like Phil DiGiuseppe can come onto your roster, make an impact, and earn a role.
Dude,
but
we're
not
worried,
like,
about making a roster spot for Kraftstoff. Like,
yeah, so you don't.
That's where we're at.
I don't know. You shouldn't be worrying about who occupies your 11th and 12th forward spots on your hockey team. Those should be, in some ways, revolving doors, and you're hoping someone runs away with the job. So I've seen a couple people. Brandon Smith was also playing PK.
It was really important. Like, that was the thing.
Yeah, I've seen a couple people pondering why it's unexcusable what the New York Rangers have done. Brandon Smith took a roster spot from this guy, blah, blah, blah. It's like, first of all, DiGiuseppe was playing a role in Hartford the team felt was important, because everything Davidson has said since day one is about building this organization up from the ground. And in order to do that, you need to have productive players playing in Hartford. You have to have guys that aren't veterans in the NHL sense of the term, but veterans of playing this game at that level to help the young kids understand what you have to do to be successful every step of your career. And it's just like, as solid as DiGiuseppe has been, we're still just talking about Phil DiGiuseppe. We're talking about a roster spot that where the Rangers, if they're good, the next time the Rangers are really good again, it's going to be a player better than Phil DiGiuseppe occupying that roster spot, we hope.
It's not a big deal that he's on the team. I thought he's been pretty good. I thought he's
no, elevated. But it's not just that it's not a big deal that he's on the team. It's not a big deal that he wasn't on the team either. Like, it is what it is.
Like, I saw people calling, they're like, why don't we get Boo Nieves up? Like, listen, I've seen enough of Boo. You know? Sorry, Boo. You're a good guy, I'm sure. Sure, you're a good dude. But I've seen enough of him playing that I don't need him back up again. I think he can get another chance elsewhere. He probably needs a change of scenery. Would you ever want to see another game with Boo Nieves play the fourth line center? He's fine.
It doesn't really matter. Maybe. Like, especially with how we've seen David Quinn use the fourth line. Whoever David Quinn wants to put out there for 7 minutes a night, I've decided I'm just not going to give a shit, because that player's not going to make a difference.
Oh, I guess we should speak about Michael Haley.
Oh, RIP. Good for him.
Yeah.
Bilateral core muscle, whatever the fuck.
He tore some muscles off some pieces of bone that I don't know of. I have no idea. Again, not a doctor. Talked a lot of medical this here podcast.
We sure did.
But
sure did.
No idea what those were torn, but I think he's going to be out for quite a while. And it sounded painful.
He kind of sounds cooked, which, again, is fine. And I mean, it's not that fine, because if Cody McLeod could be a seventh-round pick, then anyone could be a seventh-round pick.
Yeah, when you put it that way.
Yeah, in that sense, sure, we're not going to have our eighth, seventh-round pick this year. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm another guy. Haley hasn't been playing for a while anyway. Doesn't seem like Haley was going to get involved anytime soon. So, hope Haley's fine.
Yeah.
Don't wish ill upon him.
I wish him a speedy recovery, but I don't know why he was ever on the team. That's it.
No.
But again, it doesn't matter, because the fourth line doesn't get played. I'm a little
sure
surprised
doesn't.
By that.
Why? We've seen this for a year and a half.
I know. It's just I thought Quinn would be a little more, I guess, sharing the load. Is that the load share? I don't know the terminology here for what Quinn would be doing in this case. I think
rolling lines.
Yeah, I guess rolling lines would be the one. But they play like 7 minutes. I mean, Elias Anderson, when he was here, played like 7 minutes. So it doesn't matter who's on the fourth. It literally doesn't matter. They get no time. But
yeah, and the argument for why the fourth line should get more time is because the wingers on the line they're just better quality of player than the Rangers have had in the past. Like, yes, when Michael Haley and Brendan Smith are on your fourth line and you don't want to play it, I don't think anyone's going to bat an eye about it. But we know that Quinn likes Brendan Lemieux. We know that Quinn has liked stuff Phil DiGiuseppe has done.
Well, Quinn likes Brendan Lemieux enough to put him on the first line sometimes.
That's what I'm saying. So when you see Lemieux on the fourth line, it's interesting that Quinn doesn't try to – I mean, maybe this is – maybe Quinn's way of rolling four lines isn't by actually having four lines and playing them evenly. It's – making constant in-game adjustments where one guy jumps up to one line, so on and so forth, which, you know, we've talked about that in the past too, about how from where we sit, it sure feels like it disrupts chemistry in-game a little bit. But maybe Quinn's way of quote-unquote rolling lines is just by continuously putting his lines in a blender in the middle of a game. I mean,
I think it's always
at this point, we're not – if anyone is still surprised with the fact that Kapokaka could start a game on the fourth line and end it playing with Panarin, I think we just need to stop being surprised by this. I think the more surprising thing would be if Quinn stuck with his four lines in the middle of a game.
Agree, especially because it feels like last year was a big Quinbin year, right? He was always like, okay, tonight this guy's benched and we're sending a message. This year sending a message seems to be putting him on the fourth line. That's like, you want to get off this fourth line and you have to earn it. That's his quote-unquote Quinbin. He seems to be a big show me or prove it to me coach, and that seems to be his number one motivator every single time, especially now. I mean, Igor's proven it to him that he's the most capable goalie currently, and now all of a sudden his meritocracy quote from earlier in the year comes to fruition, where Igor is going to get the continued starts moving forward. Anyone who takes this as a shot versus Henrik Lundqvist or Georgiev, I don't see how that's possible. I just don't. Igor's played his mind out. He's been quite good in the games he's played. He's 5-1 as a Ranger. I don't see a problem with Igor starting multiple games in a row. Gregory, do you at all?
No, I also think if Georgiev beat the Sabres, he would have gotten a start against the Kings.
I agree.
Like, I think Quinn's at a point this season. I mean, it's I think what he wanted to do all along, and it his words are backing it up. If you lose a game, you're going to sit. I think that I really think it's that simple when it comes to goalies. Maybe it's a little bit of trying to figure out who the hell he'll play once you lose the game, but I as soon as the Rangers lost to the Sabres, if it was or wasn't Georgiev's fault, I was under the impression someone else was going to start against the Kings, plain and simple.
I believe someone.
And my feeling of why did he go back to Igor before he went to Hank is the reason you just gave. Igor's one more. Hank's got one win in his last two starts. Igor's got three in his last four. If Igor lost against the Kings, I think we'd have a Hank start on our hands the next game out. But Igor won. And maybe Igor is the only goalie right now that has any kind of leash or room for error. Because, again, I mean, it was what, 5-1, 4-1, 5-1?
5-1. 5-1.
He's 5-1.
Yes.
So, like, if he loses one game, I think Quinn will be like, all right, that's fine. Get him out next time. But no other Ranger goalie. It's the same thing we talk about baseball. It's just no way to judge a player or pitcher's performances by judging their win total.
Yep.
At the same time, Igor, he hasn't had a bad game.
No, he hasn't.
His first start, he had the hiccups early on, and then it looked like he swallowed those butterflies and he didn't have a problem ever since then. Like,
hockey is
fun. You take away those two goals he gave up in his first game, he looks great. He looks like the guy. He looks like the prince that was promised, which makes, again, all these Georgiev trade conversations or the people who are so unsettled with trading Georgiev just that much more ridiculous to me, because I get that some teams work with tandems and tandems work well. I do not see a situation where Igor Shesterkin is the Rangers goalie and he's not starting 60% of the games.
Yeah.
So then you're paying a backup? Don't pay your backup goalies. Just don't. It's dumb. It's dumb.
We talk with Kevin Kurz,
San Jose Sharks writer of The Athletic, later on this podcast. You know what happens when you end up paying the wrong goalie? San Jose Sharks is what happens.
Yeah. And there's, like, you'll find out, it's a very quick and brief interview, but the information that we get from Kevin during that interview, it's pretty damning. And it does seem like your prediction of the Rangers will go to the offseason carrying three goalies will come true. I don't think Georgiev gets moved at the trade deadline. Have you wavered on that at all?
No. Once the Leafs made their big move, I think
that was
done
it.
Here.
I agree.
Yeah. And it's something we've preached all year long. It's something we can preach one more time right now. It's just the New York Rangers aren't in a position where they absolutely positively must trade Georgiev. Not right now. Now, why did we think this? We thought this because we thought the Rangers were going to give Shesterkin an entire season in the AHL. Obviously, Igor proved to be too good for that. And now, I don't know, it doesn't make that. I don't think the package the Rangers could get today is going to be significantly less than the package the Rangers will get at the deadline. Or not the deadline, I'm sorry, the NHL draft. And the positive thing working for the Rangers is it's the same thing we've said about DeAngelo. It's the same thing we've said about Strome. We've said it about every RFA that the Rangers have on the roster right now. A lot more teams are interested in your players when they have the room for them. And the only time of the year that teams will have more room for your restricted free agent possibilities is the offseason. So outside of Kreider, I'd honestly be surprised if the Rangers make a move with a player under term.
That's just
where I am right now.
There was a big article on theathletic.com. You can sign up for theathletic.com right now. Theathletic.com/BSB. Signed today, 30% off for first year. There was an article today that was discussing all the trade deadlines, or every single team and the trade deadline. I mean, they didn't even mention Jesper Foss. They said the team could trade Tony DeAngelo, but why would they? Chris Kreider's most likely to go. Georgiev obviously probably won't happen, and they'll probably go to the draft because of the Leaf situation. That's pretty much, frankly, it. I think Strome has an outside chance of getting traded. But I think you're looking at Chris Kreider, and that might be the only move the Rangers make at this trade deadline, which sounds weird because I thought it was going to be a fire sale, but all of a sudden it's not looking that way. By the way, one quick side note, I looked up the Rangers' playoff chances, and as of The Athletic today, Dom on The Athletic has them as a 1% chance. So there's that.
Yeah, I didn't think this deadline was going to be a fire sale, and just because the Rangers don't make trades at the deadline doesn't mean they won't make trades this summer. They're going to have some tough decisions they have to make. Because, again, they simply cannot pay everybody. And they got a Henrik Lundqvist decision to make. They got a Mark Stahl decision to make. They have so many decisions to make. And they're not decisions that need to be made in February of this year. Tony DeAngelo has done so much to raise his own value in terms of what the Rangers are going to owe him on a contract. But he's also done so much to raise his value in terms of what the New York Rangers can get for in a trade. If so many teams are going to need puck-moving right-handed defensemen come next season, the Rangers could make a quote-unquote NHL trade where they're getting a winger back for him. And we've gone over the Strome stuff before. As much as once upon a time you and I thought Ryan Strome was ticketed to get the hell out of here,
I was convinced. Beyond convinced.
Now you take a step back and you realize, all right, if the New York Rangers are going to be even half competitive next year, well, they're going to need more centers than just Mika Zibanejad and Filip Hedl.
Yeah.
So without Ryan, you better have, let me put it this way. If you want to trade Ryan Strome, you better have already acquired the Ryan Strome replacement.
Or have more faith in Brett Howden playing center, which just is not going to happen. Seemingly.
Right. And I think the Rangers have realized it's not going to happen. You know why we think they've realized it's not going to happen?
They don't do it
because
anymore.
He's not playing center anymore.
Yeah.
So it's, all these are things you just have to keep in mind. It's just, it's a unique position the New York Rangers are in where Chris Kreider's value, obviously, is never going to get higher.
Never. Can we take a moment to just thank Ray Shiro? Just like, what a guy. Going on The Athletic today, again, another plug by me, they have the trade deadline tracker. It's just a picture of Chris Kreider's face. Like, he is the face of the trade deadline. And without Ray Shiro trading Taylor Hall a month and a half advance for no absolute reason, and then getting fired and losing his job, Kreider wouldn't be warranting as much value as he, or actually demanding as much value as he's doing now, which I do think the package is going to be similar. I mean, the least you're going to get is like a conditional first. You're probably getting a first and a B-plus player, a B-plus prospect, B-prospect, and that's very enticing. And I, as much as everyone else wants to keep Chris Kreider, like this hashtag keep20, love Chris Kreider, love him so much. He can come back if he wants we've talked about this on the BSB OTs. He can come back for a discount contract if he really wants to leave that money on the table. He will not want to do that. It's just, that's too much value. You can't give it up.
Yeah, and our buddy, our good friend, our uncle, Rick Carpinello,
Ricky,
who, by the way,
what's up?
I offered to have on the podcast this week.
Wait, why?
And he said he had to pick his wife up from the airport.
Wow.
I'm not sure I believe it.
First of all.
But I at least admit that it was a possibility.
First of all, good husband. Look at that guy. He's out there performing. Full-time job.
Yeah. Rick, by the way, has been doing some serious self-promotion
he's
recently.
He's killing it.
He's all over the place.
Wait, Rick is coming on in 2 weeks. Why would he come on tonight? He's always the first person we call a post-trade deadline.
Look, he did some chirping.
Oh, I chirped at you. Okay.
He said he had to pick his wife up from the airport, okay. To which I say, I see how it is. I see where the priorities are.
Talk to you on the 24th, Rick.
Yeah. Rick, one of the many that's saying, what's the first round pick going to do to help the Rangers win next year? And I've seen this pop up in a number of articles now.
I'll get to it in a second. Sorry. Go ahead.
I've seen it pop up in a number of articles now, either from Rick or from our good friend Larry Brooks, who will never come on this podcast.
Good for Larry, by the way. Fucking killing the game out there.
He's an interesting fellow. But either way, this is the time of year where I feel like some people, it's not the fact that the Rangers, this is going to sound weird. It's not the fact that the Rangers have a second first round pick. It's the fact that the Rangers have a second first round pick, which means they don't have to draft in the first round twice. Like, how did the Rangers get Jacob?
You know that gif from The Hangover where he's just doing math? It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. That's exactly what's going on in me.
Well, it's like everyone's saying, oh, well, how are you going to acquire a winger like Chris Kreider? You can't do it. You know how you acquire a winger like Chris Kreider? You have an extra first round pick that you can dangle in trade talks. Because you know how you acquire Jacob Trouba, a guy who was a year away from free agency that you didn't want to run the risk of letting get to free agency in the first place?
A first round
Rangers, pick. By the way, did that twice last year. I don't know if you guys have heard of this Adam Fox fellow.
Yeah.
He's quite good.
The Adam Fox thing worked out quite well. The Trouba thing has already become an interesting topic that I'm sure we'll have many conversations about this summer.
No, we're not going to have any conversations about him because it's a stupid conversation, so therefore I don't want to have it. However you feel about Jacob Trouba, it was viewed at the time as a major coup. And you know how you win major coups?
For sure.
You have pieces you can trade. So if the Rangers lose Chris Kreider, this doesn't mean that all of a sudden they can no longer trade the draft pick they acquired for Kreider to get someone of Kreider's ilk. There are plenty of players on the market, some players that are even going to surprise us for the fact that they are on the market. But we've heard, we're not the first ones or the only ones that have heard Jason Zucker's name out there. You know, Nino Niederreiter got traded a year and a half ago. Nobody thought that would have happened under those circumstances. Players get moved as long as you present the right package to get that player. So I'm not going to sit here and be worried that the Rangers lost Chris Kreider and, oh no, there's no way, any way the Rangers could acquire a top six winger to replace that kind of production. There's always a way. And the thing that you can guarantee is when you have the most assets, Rangers, our friend Scott Wheeler says the Rangers have right now the fourth best prospect pool in the NHL.
And that's with a lot of graduates.
Yeah, there's no Kapo, there's no Shesterkin, there's no Adam Fox on that prospect list. And the Rangers are still fourth. They have potentially two first-round draft picks if they trade Chris Kreider. They have a lot of pieces they can move to get the player that they want. You could say that whoever it is the Rangers want, they have enough pieces to go out and get it. So if you want Zucker to replace Kreider, you can do it. He'd be under term for three more years at about $5.5 million, and they're a similar age. If you want a shinier toy than that, whatever it may be, maybe if the Leafs have such a terrible year that they decide, all right, this isn't going to work with all these dynamic wingers that we have. Maybe it's time we actually do have to move on from William Nylander in order to bring something else in. You know what the Rangers have? Enough assets to go get William Nylander if they so please. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm saying it's a possibility. Let other teams decide to fuck up. And then as the Rangers, with all these assets, with two first-round picks, without a massive contract you've now given to Chris Kreider, go out and take advantage of another team's stupidity. I feel like we've forgotten that this league is incredibly dumb. And if you have a smart guy at your table, which we all think the Rangers do with Jeff Gorton, it's good to give him as many assets as possible to take advantage of that stupidity. That's how he ends up trading the Winnipeg Jets, their own first-round pick, and Neil Pionk for Jacob Trouba.
Would you consider Kyle Dubas one of the smart guys?
I do.
Me too. Do you think that's why he avoided Jeff Gorton at all costs?
Yes and no. I don't think he would have avoided Gorton if he didn't have such a high opinion of Jack Campbell. It's important to remember that Dubas has a long relationship with Jack Campbell.
Yeah, he was his agent.
He was Kyle Clifford's agent. He traded for Jack Campbell when he was the general manager in juniors.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he's acquired Jack Campbell before. So there is inherent trust that Dubas has in his guy, Jack Campbell. And it's no lie. The price for Campbell and Clifford was significantly lower than simply the price for Georgiev at this point in time.
Much cheaper. So it's, I mean, there was a lot of jokes that Gorton was like, I'm not trading him for name a player higher than Kapanen. I mean, there was a couple other players he was talking about, and Gorton was like, nope, I'm not doing
it. And I think Dubas is a smart enough guy to know that maybe Georgiev is better than Campbell, but maybe it's not as big of a gap as some people would think it is. Look, there are people within the very smart people community called analytics that say Georgiev, while young, might just be average. And young only makes average so good. So I don't know, guys. I think Dubas did what he thought was both best and practical without trying to mortgage the future at the same time. Because, look, even if they got Georgiev, they're fucked without Frederik Andersen. So if they're not fully healthy, they might not make the playoffs. You don't want to be giving up significant assets if you're not going to be making the playoffs. They didn't give up a single significant asset in that deal. I don't know how any of us could be. I mean, I get why we could be angry at Dubas for that. But if we were two guys doing a Maple Leafs podcast, I think we would have understood that trade perfectly.
Speaking of which, if you haven't enjoyed this Ranger season, I'm not sure what's wrong with you. It's been an amazing, fun Ranger season. Panarin's been great. We have so many kids that are here having a great time, and there's a lot about development. And even though you're not playing playoff hockey this year, it's been awesome. If you're a Leafs fan, I don't know how you live right now. This was your year. This was year. Like,
I don't know if it was their year, but it was a year that they're supposed to, I mean, they're always supposed to be competitive. I really do think Maple Leaf fandom and Met fandom go hand in hand. So I can see everything that's happening there and be like, yeah, this makes sense. Because think about it, dude. Like,
they have three legitimate superstars. It's crazy.
Yeah, you have Tavares, you have Marner.
Are you gonna name Mets after this?
Well, just think of their top five forwards and then think of the Mets starting rotation and you understand.
Okay, that's fair.
Why, like, yeah, a rotation with DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Stroman should never be struggling. And yet we both know the Mets are going to finish with 84 wins.
Yeah.
So, like, yes, I see a lot of parallels between the Mets and the Maple Leafs, Ryan. I don't know what to tell you on that one.
Any other topics we missed before we go to some ads and some five-star questions? Don't think so.
It's been a quiet week, right?
It's like, been, like, there hasn't been, like, big news. Like, the Rangers played some hockey games. They were good. They lost.
We're also at a point with this Rangers season where it's like, we're just waiting for the shoe to drop at this point.
Yeah,
either Kreider gets traded or he gets extended. Either someone else gets traded.
Well, we heard nothing about those Kreider talks. Supposedly, Gorton was meeting with Kreider's agent last Friday.
The people that got excited about that, it's just like, how dumb are we?
It's him playing the game.
Jeff Gorton's written out his playbook for all of us to see. And yet when he does something that is like the final step before he does the thing you don't want him to do, it's like, oh, this is it.
All right,
it.
Greg, here's a new segment. You ready? We're gonna reenact that meeting. Okay, you're Chris Kreider. I'll be Gorton.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Hey, Chris, thanks for stopping by.
Cool. What's up, man?
So listen, I got your contract offer. Let me know what you're thinking.
All right, hit me.
It's $4 million by 4 years.
Okay. All right. So Winnipeg, where am I going?
No. All right. So listen, Chris, we really value you here. Okay. Huh? We're gonna add a fifth year. $4 million, 5 years.
So it's Boston I'm getting traded to? Like where is it?
You're a part of this organization. You've been a backbone. You're great. Listen, I think we should come back next week and talk about this again, because obviously I think you're being a little tentative right now, but $4 million by 5 years, okay? Just think about it and come back, all right?
All right, I'll see you in Boston.
All right, see you then.
I don't think Kreider and his representatives are stupid. I don't think Jeff Gorton is stupid. I think if Chris Kreider wanted to accept a 4 to 5 year deal in the $6 million range, the deal would already be done. But Chris Kreider is a smart enough guy. He understands this game. As much as he likes New York, he knows not just that he knows, but he knows, like, I think Chris Kreider is the kind of guy smart enough to know that he needs to do something for the rest of the players association. Like, there's taking hometown discounts, and then there's understanding what the market is, what your value's worth, and making sure that the next guy of his age and caliber gets to the free agent market, gets paid the right amount. And I think Kreider knows that number needs to be at $7 million. And I don't think the Rangers ever crossed that bridge, which means Chris Kreider's getting traded. And we knew all this. Ryan, we knew all this in August.
We did.
Like, this really hasn't changed. Yes, Chris Kreider had a shitty first month of the NHL season. Yes, Chris Kreider has been what we expect Chris Kreider to be every game since November 1st. No, I don't think it's more likely he's going to be a New York Ranger. No, I don't think it's more likely Chris Kreider is going to take a hometown discount. No, I don't think if Kreider gets traded and gets the free agency, he'd come back to New York. Because, again, some team is going to offer him a number higher than $7 million. You know how I know that? Because Kevin Chris Kreider's better than Kevin Hayes. He's better than Kevin Hayes. And Kevin Hayes got the fucking bag. Yeah, someone's going to give Kreider the bag. What are we doing?
I don't know.
You are just lying to ourselves. You're willfully – I admire this. I do it all the time. But you're willfully lying to yourself in order to convince yourself that one thing is not going to happen.
Let's go to some little ads that we'll get to right now. I'm sure I'm going to do some fun voices. I haven't recorded them yet, but I will right now. And we'll go back to some five-star questions. Transition.
Hey, have you guys heard of DoorDash? Of course you have. You listen to this podcast. Some of the ad reads here for DoorDash says, New Year, New You. Guys, it's February. There's no time for New You. It's time to order food. That's right. What do you want? Wendy's? Taco Bell? Anything you want in your area, you can get it at DoorDash. DoorDash brings all of America's flavors to your door. Ordering is super easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be delivered to you wherever you are. It could be your favorite pizza place. It could be Chinese. It could be anything. Chick-fil-A, Cheesecake Factory. Cheesecake Factory is overrated. Fight me, anybody. Anyway, call to action. This is what you got to do. This is what you have to do to make DoorDash work. Right now, listeners of Blue Shirts Breakaway can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app or enter code BSB. That's right. Code is BSB for Blue Shirts Breakaway. Your first order, $5 off when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code BSB. And listen, if you haven't forgot already, it's code BSB. So that's enough. Like, it's a deal. Order your food. You were going to order it anyway. Okay, what else we got today?
Yes. Excuse me. As one season ends, the next begins. DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook, is now live with XFL action. The XFL is back, and it's bigger and badder and more extreme than ever. DraftKings Sportsbook will continue to offer great football action, moving into the next season of professional football. The XFL comes with new rules, and DraftKings is offering you a special promo to earn some free bets. Teams can now score 1, 2, or 3 points after a TD. For each PAT your team converts, DraftKings Sportsbook will give you $1. $1 towards a free bet. DraftKings Sportsbook is a safe and secure betting app. You can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. It's no wonder why DraftKings Sportsbook is America's top-rated sportsbook app. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code QUICK when you sign up. For a limited time, all new users can get a sign-up bonus up to $1,000. That's right. DraftKings Sportsbook can sign up a bonus up to $1,000. Don't forget, enter code QUICK and you can sign up for a bonus up to $1,000. Only at DraftKingsSportsbook.com. You must be 21 years old or older. New Jersey only. Bonus compromise of a first deposit. Bonus and first bet match each up to $500. Deposit bonus requires 25x playthrough. Research supplies. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. And one more.
Hey guys, we talked a lot about medical things in today's shows, but if you were to guess on average, how many days people in the United States have to wait to see a doctor, what would you say? Like a week? Actually, on average, people have to wait like 29 days to see a doctor in major U.S. cities. It's pretty much a month. If you're dealing with a condition like erectile dysfunction, I mean, you want to treat that ASAP. That's why our friends at Roman have spent years building a digital platform that can connect you with a doctor licensed in your state, all from the comfort of your home. Roman makes it easy and convenient to get treatment you need on your schedule. Just grab your phone or your computer and get a complete free online visit. You'll hear back from a U.S. licensed physician within 24 hours. And if the doctor decides the treatment is right for you, well, Roman's Pharmacy can ship you medication with free two-day shipping. You also get free, unlimited follow-ups with your doctor anywhere, anytime. And you have any questions? You want to address your treatment plan? Do it with Roman. There are no commitments, and you can cancel at any time. So if you're struggling with ED, go to Get Roman. I did it right this time. GetRoman.com/BSB for a free online visit and get free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman, not GetRoman. GetRoman.com/BSB for a free online visit and free two-day shipping. Back to the show. Hey, we're back with our first guest of the day. We have Kevin Kurz. He covers the Sharks for The Athletic. Kevin, thanks so much for coming on with us.
Yeah, no problem, guys.
I know it's a little bit... the trade deadline is coming quick, I guess is what I want to say. And there's been a lot of rumors here or there with the Sharks. What are the Sharks? Are the Sharks sellers? Are they buyers? What are they come this deadline?
Yeah, they're definitely sellers. I mean, you know, headed into Monday's game with Calgary here, they're in 14th place in the conference. So, you know, they're not going to be a playoff team, obviously. And that's, I think that's pretty evident at this point. So, you know, they're going to sell. If you just look at the breakdown of the roster, it doesn't look like they have too many pieces to sell. Brendan Dillon's a defenseman who will get some interest. Melker Carlson is a depth forward, penalty kill specialist type of a guy. Aaron Dell is, you know, he's a pending UFA, but he's played well in goal. He's been their best player, really, since Bob Bugner took over for Pete DeBoer as a head coach. So, you know, they could trade him, but you could also make a case they should probably re-sign him because the state of the goaltending out here has been, you know, pretty poor with Martin Jones for the last 2 years. So, you know, they have a lot of big salaries, but a lot of these big salaries also have trade restrictions one way or another. So, you know, maybe Doug Wilson has some sort of surprise up his sleeve. I'm not sure about that. We'll have to wait and see. But I do expect them to sell off, you know, some assets just for some future help in the draft.
Now, a lot of people will be wondering, all right, what are New York Rangers guys, teams that obviously are also going to be selling, talking to a San Jose Sharks writer? And you kind of summarized it a little bit for us there in the fact that the Sharks' biggest problem, at least the last couple of years, has been what the hell has been happening in the crease. And the New York Rangers have this weird thing where they might have too many goalies, and it's naturally put the Sharks and Rangers together. Now, you're going to tell us, we're probably thinking too pie in the sky for anything to happen before the deadline, right?
Well, I mean, listen, I've been doing this long enough that you never discount anything. And on its face, it does make sense that, you know, I would expect the Sharks are looking for some help in goal one way or another. Now, you know, how they want to go about that is tough to say. They have Martin Jones here, who hasn't been very good the last two seasons. There's 4 years left on his contract at $5.75 million. So is that a contract that they want to buy out? I mean, you know, I don't know. That's eight years worth of cap penalties if you do that. I certainly don't see any situation in which they could trade Jones. And I don't know that anybody would want that contract with the numbers he's put up. So, you know, I don't. To me, what'll be sort of a tell will be what they do with Aaron Dell. If they trade him before the deadline, then that to me means, well, they hope that Martin Jones can somehow get fixed and they'll probably look for some sort of a veteran to bring into the offseason. If Dell doesn't get traded before the deadline, I would think that means they're going to resell them and probably just try to move on from Martin Jones one way or the other. So, you know, looking at the Rangers, I know their situation right now. Does that make sense that the Sharks might want to talk to them about acquiring, you know, Georgiev? You know, you would think it would make sense, but I can tell you there haven't been any Rangers scouts at Sharks teams for the last couple of weeks. So, you know, read into that whatever you want.
It is definitely scout season, and whenever there's a scout at a game, you always see the tweets. There are XX amounts of scouts at this game. So if there hasn't been a Ranger scout at the Sharks game, that does concern me a little bit. There's been some sort of hypothetical trades, and I'm going to butcher his name. It's LeBanc, I guess. Kevin LeBanc shares a name with you,
right?
And the trade,
yeah, well,
the trade is usually Georgiev for LeBanc that gets floated out.
Right.
And that's not really a possibility, well, I mean, is what you're saying.
Well, I mean, again, you never say never. I mean, Kevin LeBanc had a really good year last year. And, you know, he's declined a little bit this season. You know, he's a really good offensive player in the offensive zone. He's creative. He, you know, he's got a good shot. He doesn't have the big, you know, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but, you know, he does have the ability to play power play also. And, you know, but from the Sharks' perspective, they're having trouble scoring goals this year. They lost a whole bunch of guys in the offseason at forward, Joe Pavelski, the most notable. And they haven't really gotten their younger guys to contribute as much as they had hoped. And Kevin LeBanc is on that list. And, you know, might the Sharks dangle the bank in some sort of a hockey deal? I wouldn't count that out at all. But I would think if they traded LeBanc, it would have to be for either a goaltender or for another player that could play right away. So just looking at their forward depth, you know, their forward depth is so poor right now that I don't think they want to, you know, they're not going to trade one of their forwards that they still have high hopes for, unless it's for someone that can immediately help.
Can you explain,
Kevin, are we in a situation with the Sharks where are they even with the contracts they've signed recently and the veteran talent they have on the roster? Is this a team even capable of rebuilding?
Well, what do you mean rebuilding quickly?
Yeah, basically. I mean, sure. Yeah. Every team can strip down to the spare parts, but the Sharks are a team designed to win now and they're not. So what should they do? What can they do?
Well, that might be two different things. You know, what they're going to do is they're going to try to rebound quickly and become a playoff team. Doug Wilson has said that. He made that very clear in a session with a couple local media guys last week, you know, of which I was one, obviously. And, you know, they don't have rebuild in their vocabulary right now. And that's just the way they're going to go about it. And I think that's partially because they probably have to. you know, you signed Erik Karlsson to a long deal. You know, it's his first year of his 8-year, $92 million contract. And some of the other guys they got, whether it's Logan Couture, Thomas Hertl, locked up. You know, they have some good pieces, some good core pieces. Timo Meier's another one who, you know, he's had a rough year or an inconsistent year, but he's been a lot better lately. You know, they believe they have the core pieces in place and they're going to have to build around those core pieces. And that's going to be the plan. Now, you know, are they going to be able to do that is a whole different story, because they have guys like Brent Burns, Mark Edward Vlasic, Karlsson, like I said, Evander Kane, Timo Meier. You know, a lot of these guys are locked up for foreseeable future. And it either doesn't make sense to trade some of those guys, or in a guy like, you know, if you're looking at Burns and Vlasic, for example, they have expensive deals. They're on the other side of 30. Burns is going to be 35 in March, and they have, in Vlasic's case, a full no movement, and Burns' case, a limited no movement. So is Doug Wilson going to be able to move one of those guys? You know, it might come down to shedding one of those big salaries, and that's a lot easier said than done.
A lot of Ranger fans were interested in signing, why did I just blank on his name, the person you signed for $92 million, the best defenseman in the NHL. Oh my God, I'm blanking.
Well, Erik Karlsson.
Jesus, sorry. Erik Karlsson. We were interested in signing Erik Karlsson for a long time. How is he performing in the first year of the contract for people that don't watch West Coast games?
Yeah, he's been inconsistent. I think there's concerns there about how he was coming off of a groin injury last season. You know, to me, it looks like at times there's things he's trying to do out there that maybe he used to do 3 or 4 years ago that he just, you know, he can't quite do them this season for whatever reason, whether it's just sidestepping a guy at the blue line on the power play to get a shot off, or, you know, that those first couple steps behind the net leading to a breakout. You know, it's not quite there. And he, you know, he's still got the hands. He's still got the playmaking ability. He's still an effective player more times than not. You know, some of the defensive errors leave you shaking your head every once in a while. But, you know, that's just, you know, what you come to expect with a guy like that who's a little bit more high risk, high reward. So, you know, in its entirety, it's been a little bit of a disappointment so far, no doubt about it. And Karlsson's going to have to be better if this team's going to, you know, is going to achieve what Doug Wilson wants them to achieve and make the playoffs next year.
I wonder where does the hope even start? I'm very curious. So like, what, I know you have Timo Meier, you have other players, but like, who are the players that really need to perform other than Karlsson that are going to have to force this team to be competitive?
Well, they're going to have to find another goalie, like a Georgia talking about before. Yeah. Well, maybe. You know, that's the first thing to me that they're going to have to address. They're going to need more scoring up and down the lineup. You know, the hope was this year that some of their younger prospects were going to be able to fill in the vacancies that were left from some of the guys that left in the offseason. That hasn't happened. You know, it seems to me they overrated their prospects in the system a little bit. And, you know, a lot of those guys are in the minors now. We'll see if they turn into anything. There aren't really any blue chip type prospects. They're going to come up and score 20 goals next season, at least from what I can tell. And you know, you need your core guys to be better. That's Karlsson. That's, you know, that's Brent Burns, if he's still here. Timo Meier, Kevin LeBanc, all these guys, you know, Thomas Hertl, who's hurt now, they're going to have to hope he comes back and, has two good knees. So you can go right down the list. You know, what does any team need to do to be successful? Good goaltending, depth scoring, and solid defense. And right now, really, the only thing the Sharks have is they've been defending better since Bugner took over, but the goals and the goaltending have still been up and down.
I know we've obviously Ranger fans want to hear a lot about LeBanc because he's the dream if there is a trade between the Sharks and the Rangers. But if we go back to the offseason when LeBanc kind of shockingly took that 1 year, $1 million deal, is his season basically the perfect example of why young players should just always go for the bag when you have the opportunity to get the bag?
Yeah, I mean, he certainly could have gotten more. I don't think there's any question. You know, maybe he's regretting that now. It's hard to say. But, you know, I think if you're a Sharks fan, you applaud him for what he did because, you know, he wanted to be part of this team. He wanted to fit under the salary cap. You know, after they signed Erik Karlsson, there was going to have to be, you know, there was maybe going to be a casualty, but he, you know, he came in and he took that deal. And yeah, maybe in hindsight, he could hold out for a little bit more. But, you know, you're not going to rip the guy for doing the team a favor and sort of betting on himself was the phrase that they both used. He's still going to get paid at some point this summer, maybe not as much as it would have been last summer, but he's a young kid and he'll keep working and he does work hard on and off the ice to get better. So, you know, I'm not going to criticize the guy just because he was trying to help the team out.
Greg, I'm out of questions for Sharks related content. Any other questions for our friend Kevin?
I would just, Kevin, from our conversation, it sounds like what? We're thinking less than a 10% chance a deal gets done between the Rangers and the Sharks before the deadline?
Well, yeah, I would say that.
But it does kind of sound like if a deal were to happen, the Rangers and Sharks are still common bedfellows. Maybe come NHL draft time.
Yeah, you know, we hear Doug Wilson say all the time, a lot of the conversations that the general managers have this time of year, it's not necessarily to get something done before the deadline, but to set something up in the offseason. And to me, the offseason is where the Sharks are really going to have to fix this thing if they're going to get it fixed at all, because they're just so restricted right now by, I think, some of their big salaries and the cap and guys that they, you know, might be willing to move and might not be willing to move.
Kevin, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
Yeah, just The Athletic, a lot of my friends these days.
All of us, yep. And on Twitter, you want to plug that too, or you just Twitter, stay away?
Yeah, it's KKers NHL. Thanks.
Awesome. Thanks, Kevin, so much for coming on. We appreciate your time.
Okay. You got it, guys. Take care.
Talk to you soon. Hey, we're back. Okay, great interview. A little bit of a very short interview, but packed with information. And Georgiev is
short,
definitely not
short because we interrupted Kevin's entire day by asking him to come on a podcast the same night the Sharks are playing a game.
Hey, so man, we're coworkers, so it's fine. That's how that works.
Yeah, right? and also the point of the Kevin's interview is basically to be like, I know ESPN included the trade scenario in their wacky trade deadline prediction trades. I know other people have written about it as well, but that interview was basically to pour cold water on the heads of everyone expecting the Rangers and Sharks to at least make a trade before the trade deadline. Kevin himself will be the first to tell you that, yeah, maybe if the Rangers and Sharks get back together before the NHL draft, there's something they can work out here, but it ain't happening before then. There's just no reason for the Sharks to make it happen before then. They know Georgiev's going to be available come June. They don't need to pay the Rangers price right now. They are willing to bet that they can get the Rangers to lower their price in the summer. Or, straight up, they'll just find another guy. They just don't have to make that choice right now.
Very interested to see what happens there. Let's go through some five-star questions. This one's a little bit of a long one. This is from David Schnecker. He says,
This isn't the one from our friend saying we only talk about Tony's politics.
No, that's not our two-star review from the week. It's not a segment that we'll be doing on this podcast, two-star reviews.
it cracks me up. I don't know how more clear we can be about the fact that
I don't care.
It's not our responsibility to police Tony D'Angelo and his personal belief.
Greg, we had a serious rant that was, I think, 7 minutes of you, 3 minutes of me, that were like, we cannot tell you how to root for players. It's not our
job. Sure can't. not a job. I don't want it to be my job. It shouldn't be anybody's job but your own. However you got to do it, you need to go do it.
That's it. All right, this is from David. He says, this is two questions, don't really know the rules. Sorry. Thank you. I know this is going to be going back a couple episodes, but with the Lindy Ruff situation, if the Rangers decided to part ways with Ruff, whose job would it have to be to have that talk? And who would be the person? Pretty much he's asking who would fire Lindy Ruff.
Jeff, I would think it's...
Jeff Gorton, right?
I think Quinn could ask Gorton to remove him from the coaching staff, but I think it has to come through Gorton.
Yeah, and he pretty much says, at what point would it be stop being Lindy Ruff's fault and somebody else's, like David Quinn? When Lindy Ruff is gone, unfortunately. That's probably the case. When Lindy Ruff is fired, and if all the same defensive issues are still happening, well, then it's not Lindy Ruff's fault, is it?
No, but it's also, you know, you start getting chicken and the egg type of situation here. Like, is David Quinn following Lindy Ruff's defensive scheme even after Lindy Ruff is gone because he agrees with it? Is this a marriage that made sense for both of them because they don't see a problem with what's going on? And as ridiculous as this is going to be to say, Ryan, they've been playing better defensively. But again, how much of the Rangers playing better defensively has to do with the fact that the players they have out there are simply better than what they've been in the past? Like, is Adam Fox unflappable with whatever system you put him in?
I don't think it matters as long as he's playing hockey. He's that
as
good.
As much shit as people love to give Jacob Trouba and Brady Shea, they've been playing well. I don't know what else to tell you. I know it's a really fun opinion to say, oh, the Rangers got to get rid of Brady Shea. Oh, the guy the Rangers should be trading is Brady Shea. Oh, blah, 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 blah. It's like, guys, you know, I don't know what to tell you. He's fine. Is he going to be a top-pairing defenseman? No. Should he be playing top-pairing defensive minutes with Jacob Trouba? No. But that doesn't mean either of them are bad. It's just like we do this dance so many times. We get frustrated that a player isn't quite what we want that player to be, and then we realize, well, that's because we're asking the player to do too much. Maybe ask him to do less.
I want to
like
point
Paul
out
Paul Rudd and fucking forgetting Sarah Marshall here, man.
David did post this on February 4th, and this was prior to the ESPN trade article, okay? He says, question two, I've been thinking about the possible Kreider trade and had this thought. Anders Bjork and a first-round pick for Kreider's 50% salary retention. I'm pretty sure that Boston doesn't have the cap take on the full contract, which is why I added the retention. Love the podcast. Great listen. Thanks so much, guys. I mean, that trade's so good that ESPN wrote about it. So that,
well,
that?
I think a lot of people have been trying to speak Bjork into existence, and I mean, I'd be fine with it for sure. Like, I'm not going
to
complain.
I had one Bruins fan tell me that I would be endlessly sad if Bjork was traded to the Rangers.
Well, then that's all I need to hear.
That's the same. That was the only thing I needed to know about that. I don't know anything really about Bjork, but as soon as a fan said I'd be really upset if he was traded, I know it's good. That's when you know it's happy. Just like when we were trading Pionk, we were telling everyone, we're like, please take him, please. Somebody wrote in, it's cool, and then it's literally 28 numbers afterwards, and I'm not going to read them. I don't know if they want me to, but we'll see.
Interesting.
This is pretty much a non-question. Georgiev and Staal for Kapanen. Okay, let's just move on. All right. Thank you for writing in. I appreciate it. Cool.
Since we've brought up the name Mark Staal.
Yeah, what's up?
He's going to be a New York Ranger next year, isn't he?
Absolutely.
Like, we're never buying him.
No, there's no way. I called that a couple years ago. It's one of my only good calls. There was no way we were buying him out.
I don't know what I've done to come to accept the fact that Mark Staal is going to play out his contract with the New York Rangers. And, you know, the crazy thing is we have to blame Lieber Hayek for this, for just not being better.
If Lieber was
because
better.
Remember that fun like 3-week stretch where it was clear that Staal was gonna sit because he just was the seventh guy.
Yeah,
and the Rangers understood
somehow that... Gregory, what you're saying right now is hilarious when you really think about it. Somehow Henrik Lundqvist has gotten the short end of this and Mark Staal has survived.
Yeah, it's fucking weird that like Henrik Lundqvist, like the possibility Lundqvist gets bought out, as low as I think it is. We're probably somewhere around 15%. And I think if you told me this is what was going to happen after Staal got scratched for Hayek and Lindgren, I mean, the fact Stahl's like at 5% right now.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
Staal still plays, man. And Henrik is still a great goalie. But Staal plays every night.
It's so fucking weird that insane. Mark Staal is going to survive all this shit.
Some random person named Bubaloblargan. Okay, thank you.
I'm sure you got that one perfectly.
I nailed it. Is there anyone obviously in the market for Georgiev now that the Leafs have their backup? Is it smart to wait until the summer now? What's your reaction if they decide to do nothing at the deadline, rather? I think we kind of covered a lot of this. It doesn't seem like there really is a big market. The Sharks are the people that everyone talks about. Their beat writer literally just said to us there's pretty much no chance. I mean, he said it could happen, but...
There are still teams. Vegas needs to do something to help
Ottawa,
address the goalie situation.
Maybe...
No, Ottawa's... So. But Ottawa's not going to do anything until the summer.
That's true.
Minnesota could either do something before the deadline to address their goalies, or they too could wait until the summer. There are still a couple teams that are in the obvious need for a goalie. And look, there's still 2 weeks until the deadline. All it takes is one person to get injured and one contending team to come down with an injury. And then all of a sudden, Georgiev becomes all the more appetizing because he's not making any money. So it may not seem obvious today. This conversation could change literally in 7 days and we could be talking about this completely differently. But I think the Rangers have all along planned to go to the summer and then do something then. And I think we were just trying to convince ourselves otherwise. But I think the Rangers' grand plan has been to do something about this come June. And we will see what they will do about it come June.
They have a second question, but it's on baseball, so we're going to do it at the end. This is from Nick DiPaolo. Nick DiPaolo, sorry, Nick. I know I talk about your name every week and I mess it up. Let me preface this by saying the team should sell guys like Kreider, Strom, Georgiev, etc. at the deadline. But realistically, how far back does that move our true contention window? I've seen people throw out the 2021 season, or rather the 2021-2022 season, as the first year of true contention, but I find that pretty optimistic. Most of our young talent won't even reach their prime for another 4 to 5 years, and at that point, Panarin is 32 or 33 years old. It seems like the windows aren't exactly lining up. Is this something I should be concerned about, or am I overthinking it?
I don't think he's overthinking it, but I also don't think it's something he should be concerned about. I don't think we will not be able to sit down the second after the NHL trade deadline expires and say, the Rangers are now X years away from competing. I think while it's important for the Rangers to get assets while they can at this deadline, the most important moment this Rangers team will have is NHL draft time and July 1st, because we will know or have a more complete picture of what the hell this roster is going to look like. I think it's very clear the Rangers feel they are close to being a perennial contender again. I think they feel great about having Fox, Panarin, Shea on their blue line. I think they feel great about having Panarin, Zibanejad, Keitel, Kako on their forward ranks. And I think the Rangers are going to have long conversations about Tony D'Angelo's long-term future as a New York Ranger, Pavel Buchnevich's long-term Ranger future as a New York Ranger. The closer we get to the trade deadline, the more it seems likely, like, Chris Kreider might get sold for a prospect and a pick. The Rangers want to trade Strom or D'Angelo. I think they're getting a roster player in return. And those deals typically do not happen in season if you're a rebuilding team like the Rangers are. So there's a scenario where the Rangers keep Tony D'Angelo and they're a step closer to competing. And there's a scenario where the Rangers trade Tony D'Angelo to address a weakness they can't otherwise address on their roster, which gets them a step closer to competing. So I don't think this trade deadline, you should say, oh, the Rangers traded Kreider. That means they're definitely still 2 years away. I think whether the Rangers trade Kreider or not, all of this will be determined by what the hell they do come the summer. And I think the Rangers think they're close.
The way I look at it is it's after 2015, they put the car in the garage. And they just open up the garage door to get back out there. The car's been sitting in the garage for 3 years. They've been the rebuilding. They've done the tune-ups, and now they're going to take the garage out and take it for a spin again. They're ramping up to fight for a playoff contention spot and fight for championships for the next 5 to 6 years. Thing is, this is the tricky part that Gorton has to go through. He has to navigate this window to make sure that his assets that he signed for the long term, Panarin, Trouba, etc., match up with this young talent. And that's how far can you push in to make sure those things match up is really what we're going to find out in the next couple of years. This next question is from the Nikki H. Hey guys, before I ask my question, such love for the podcast. Look forward to every week. Thanks, Nick. Thank you and solid work. Trying to understand the draft, I won't lie, I'm a little bit confused as to who gets what and why and how the picks are confirmed. I get the basics of lowest team picks first, but a touch lost after that. Might be a stupid question. Cheers from the UK. Praise be. I guess he's asking how the draft works.
I mean, it's funny because, you know, you think about English sports. There aren't any drafts in soccer. I mean, there is in the MLS because, again, the MLS is fucking weird and it plays by their own rules when they shouldn't be playing by their own damn rules in an international community of a game. I mean, it's just worst record, and it's there are tiebreakers to decide picks thereafter that we don't need to get into. But the worst team picks first, the best team that won the Stanley Cup picks last. And that's about as far as it gets.
Well, the lottery, I think, is the big part of it. So it's...
The worst team has the best odds.
Yes.
So on and so forth.
Let me provide you with an answer, Nikki. Go to tankathon.com and have a blast. That's pretty much how you should look at how the draft works. They have all the draft... Nice plug for Tankathon here, but they have all the draft rankings for the next year's prospects, and you can also simulate the draft, and you can see all the percentages teams have to move up and or move down, etc. This one's from Lindy's Rough. It's our last question. Writing this after the Buffalo game for context, everyone loves to call Quinn to get fired, but seriously, how much blame falls on him? At least three...
Who's everyone?
Not us. At least three chances tonight, the puck was on the goal line, and we got screwed with great defensive play or bad puck luck, and there are three goals... were just egregious mistakes. How does Quinn factor into players making completely bonehead decisions?
Well, a good coach never eliminates bonehead decisions from being made, right? But a good coach helps stifle them.
Lessons.
They happen less and less frequently under a good coaching staff.
I think Quinn's been fine, by the way. I think Quinn's been...
Yeah, I don't know. This is a hard question. It's a hard question for us to answer because, one, I don't think there's a very big divide in the Ranger fan. Like, if there's a percentage of Ranger fans that want Quinn fired, it's a very loud and annoying 10% at best.
Yeah,
because... Like, just because you hear people saying it doesn't mean it's actually been said a lot. It's just the people that say it are very loud and persistent and put it in your face and take every opportunity to say it. Like, I think there's a big difference between a fan base wanting a coach to be fired and the Ranger fans that want David Quinn to be fired. It's not going to please everybody.
Yeah, Quinn's been good. I mean, this team was statistically quite bad for the first half of the season, and now they've come up to statistically average. He's held people accountable. People have developed and moved forward. Has Trouba really played up to his full potential yet? No, but we're getting there. He's been good. There's Shea, obviously, has some other things to go through, but that's all the defensive problems. But there has been a lot of good developments, too. I mean, Buchnevich, who gets flamed for being cold 1 week, but then scores four goals in five games, and then everyone all of a sudden is back on the Buchnevich train. So Quinn's handled this team. I think he's done a pretty good job. And, I mean, the other person the Rangers were going to hire was Montgomery, and he's no longer in the league, along with, like, 28 other coaches, and somehow David Quinn is a veteran in the NHL at this point. So I haven't disliked Quinn's season. I thought he's been fine. I don't think he's been exceptional, but I think he's been good.
Yeah, also, I just think everyone, you see what a guy like Panarin or even what Carmelo did when he came here. You see guys that come to New York that are great players and are immediately great or continue to be great. Trouba comes to New York. It's still fucking New York, guys. Not every free agent signing that comes to New York is immediately good in their first year. Carlos Beltran's worst season as a professional, I think, was 2005 with the New York Mets. He only hit like 15 home runs. He didn't do much. And then his 2006 season, he was a runner-up in the MVP race. So some guys take a little longer to adjust back to playing in this market than others. And look, it can't be easy on it honestly can't be easy on Trouba to get his payday along with Panarin, see how Panarin is loved in this fan base, see how immediately his impact is felt. And Trouba, it's a little harder. Right, like you're asking Trouba.
You really don't see people out. Really, people out here being like, "I love Jacob Trouba." When was the last time you read that?
No, this is gonna sound weird. Jacob Trouba's being asked to do more than Artemi Panarin, right? Like, Panarin has become the guy that carries this Ranger team, but the fact that this Ranger team is even in a position to be carried is their defense is playing better than it has in a very long time. And Jacob Trouba's a big reason for that. Not just for what he does on the ice, but the fact that, like, Trouba helped change the conversation about the New York Rangers' defensive unit. It's no more about how do they still need some more talent in that group? Yeah, but we're not talking about it as if it's, like, an abomination anymore. And Trouba's a part of that. So I don't know, guys. Like, we just got to fucking relax with Trouba and understand that he didn't have to win the Norris this year to justify that contract.
Next year.
He just had to be Jacob Trouba.
Next year he has to step it up, for sure. But we'll see how the... I mean, he's been an above-average defenseman. He just has to be that solid number one defenseman if the Rangers are going to compete at that high level. But that's a conversation we'll have at another time. The last question is from another user that we already spoke about, and it's what were your opinions on the Betts trade? I know some people get mad when you talk baseball on the show, but I would like to know. I love it. All right.
We should talk about the new trade, right? The one that is now official.
That's correct. Oh, by the way, if you want to follow us on Twitter, I'm at O'Reilly. Greg's at Blue Shirts Break. And I want to thank all our supporters, including Tori from Manhattan, Brian Doyle, Eric Stagg, Ben Weber, and everyone else that loves us, and I appreciate you. Love you so much. Bye. All right, now let's talk baseball.
I just think it's hilarious the Red Sox acquired Jeter Downs.
Yeah, had to get Jeter. I like Jeter Downs, by the way. I
think he's a good prospect. It just tickles me that they acquired Jeter Downs.
I don't know why they thought Brewster was going to be enough, and then I feel like they got flamed by the media enough where they were like, okay, we're going back on this trade because of the medicals.
Yeah, I can't believe the Boston Red Sox thought they weren't going to get shit for trading Mookie Betts, what? Right? Because I think
star player, second best player in baseball.
And I made this argument to our close group of friends, and I'll echo it here. If you're making a trade, if you're the team trading Mookie Betts, it doesn't matter what you're getting in return, you've lost that trade, right? You can't be the team that trades Mookie Betts, nor should the Boston Red Sox of all teams be in a financial position where they feel like they have to trade Mookie Betts. So if you put those things out there, the Red Sox, one of the wealthiest teams in baseball, shouldn't be in a position where they can't pay a player. And the Red Sox, one of the wealthiest teams in baseball, who should never be in a position where they can't pay a player, shouldn't be having this discussion about a clear top three player in this sport.
My full stop. My thing is, you could trade him at the deadline.
Right. That's so then your argument becomes twofold, right?
Right.
Could the Boston Red Sox still got this package for Mookie Betts in July?
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Because you know why? He's Mookie fucking Betts.
He's like best player in baseball.
You can trade Mookie Betts whenever the hell you want as long as he's healthy. And I guess if you're the Red Sox, you don't want to risk him not being healthy and then you truly being fucked. But you know what? Then you're still not being fucked. You know why you're not being fucked? Oh, no. Now all I have to do is pay Mookie Betts and I can have him forever? Oh, woe is me.
I don't like this.
I'm crying for you.
I don't like this whole thing that's like, well, he was going to test free agency no matter what. Okay? You're the Red Sox. You have first negotiating with him. He could be a Red Sox for life. Play his whole career there. That's a big sell.
Yeah, but I will say this, though, right? If you're going to trade Mookie Betts and if you're going to put David Price in that deal where you're asking another team to pay at least half of David Price's contract, I said this then, I'll say it now. I don't know how the Red Sox could have done better in this deal, right? If you're just trading Mookie Betts without any financial obligations being put on top of that, yes, you should be able to get a team's entire farm system for Mookie Betts. But you understand the business of the game. You understand that this is now becoming a half salary dump. So the fact that the Red Sox were getting two top 100 prospects for Betts and Price.
I did think that was ridiculous. I thought the first trade where they got Brewster and Verdugo, I was like, that's a light return. But when they got Downs and Verdugo, I was like, that's a legitimate, like, That's a good return. Like those Downs ranks like at some places like 23rd ranked prospect, and Verdugo is like has been the above average prospect of the league for like the last like 5 years. He's like
there's a
replacement
I'm,
value.
I'm lower on Verdugo than most.
Me too.
I'm not 100%. I think the bat plays. If he was better anywhere on the field, I think.
I'm quite high on Downs, but I that was weird. Quite high on Downs, huh? I'm quite high on Jeter. But It's just you traded the second best player in baseball and you're the Red Sox. Yeah, it's just not a good optics.
Yeah, if you're the Boston Red Sox, you shouldn't have made this trade. I don't like you're putting up the white flag before the season starts that you're not going to be better than the Yankees. And I've since the Red Sox have gone on their World Series winning run, we've never seen this.
Well, the Rays have six outfielders now. So there you go.
Yeah, and we're not convinced that three of them can play the outfield.
I don't know. It's like yeah, Margo Jose, Kiermaier.
I know Jose Martinez can't.
Yep.
The Japanese import that they have, we've heard mixed reviews.
The Padre guy, what's his name? Hunter
Manuel Margot.
And Renfroe also, by the way.
Do you remember, dude, Margot was going to be the centerpiece of a Noah Syndergaard trade last year.
Yeah, they got him for like nothing. They traded Emilio Pagan, who was one of their best relievers.
Just a good reliever. That's it.
Yeah.
And he was the centerpiece of a fucking Syndergaard trade.
I don't know if you know this, but Tampa Bay is like notorious for developing good relievers and then trading them. So
it's almost like that's a marketing efficiency.
It's kind of like what they do. It's so weird, huh? The Rays marketing efficiencies. Huh.
Oh, man. Straight yeah, I don't know. This is all to say that I've never experienced the start to spring training like I have for this year with the Mets, where if I look at this team on paper, I should be quite excited. And I can't help but feel just utterly pessimistic about just everything.
I'll tell you
and
what.
I think it's what happens when your team gets sold and then it doesn't get sold. And it's what happens when you hire a good manager and he gets fired before managing one game.
Unbelievable. If the World Series is not the Yankees versus the Dodgers, whoever's hosting the World Series this year is going to be pissed. And the fans will likely be robbed because that's what I want to see. I got to be honest. That's what I got to see this year. Dodgers-Yankees is going to be a hell of a fight.
I will say, though, with as much bitching as Yankee fans and Dodger fans have done this offseason because of the Astros and the Red Sox.
Yeah.
It would be hilarious if the World Series was like
Braves-Twins. Oh no, that's
no Braves-Twins.
Yeah, Braves-Twins.
Yeah, like if the Dodgers somehow don't make the World Series without the help of someone banging on a trash can, and if the Yankees can't get over the hump despite the fact that the Houston Astros have been neutered, mm-hmm. and it's just two completely random fucking teams, I'd at least as a miserable Met fan, I'd laugh because I know the Mets did nothing to help this situation, but. I left. Did you see the new proposal by Baseball Today, by the way?
I briefly glimpsed
changes
it.
To the playoffs possible.
They get byes, right?
Seven teams.
Okay.
And
top seed gets a bye.
And the top seed gets to pick who they play.
It's pretty cool. Listen,
I like it.
Listen, I know people are traditionalists. I'm all for change. Disrupt the mean.
That's it is statistically harder to make the baseball postseason than any other sports postseason, right? Because there are 30 teams in basketball and 16 teams
in hockey.
It's
like if you're in the top half,
right?
You're making it.
The NBA and hockey put over 50% of their teams in, and then football. Actually, is it harder to make the football playoffs these days? Because it's 12 teams, math 32.
Yeah, but you just win your division, and it's different divisions. I guess I don't know. It's with the MLB, I don't have a problem with them making it different. I think it's good.
I just think it would be fucking hilarious to see these teams pick their opponents.
I just feel like three of the last like 4 years, the AL has been decided in July. And like, I don't really want that happening.
Yeah. And then you get like, it really does feel like 1 year, it's just one league runs away with it. And the other league, it's just, we're all waiting for that final shoe to drop. And I don't get me wrong. I like the wild card games too. I think
they're fun.
A second wild card team makes the season a lot more enjoyable, and it makes it seem like a lot fewer teams are trying to blow it up at the trade deadline, which makes everything fascinating. And as a Met fan, I just want to find new ways to break my own heart.
That's
so
it.
I am in for some team. I am in for the Mets making it as like not a wild card team. And then like the Dodgers being like, you know who we want?
The Mets.
Because we're going to bet on them fucking this up.
It's
and I'll just be sitting here like, That's a good bet. I can't even be angry about it.
All right, great.
Fucking good job.
Speaking of heartbreak, we'll be back next week. Love y'all. Bye.